Hello and welcome to the Andyplex, the podcast where we talk about films we love with creatives and also hear their journeys. I'm your host, Andy Majorano, and this is episode 40, Four In For A Treat. Returning from episode 39, The Rosemaker, where we discussed La Fine Fleur, is Andres Fernandez. Andres chose a French film to celebrate his multicultural escapades and speaking four languages. Today we will discuss his journey as a linguist and foreign film festival worker. Welcome back, Andres.
I mean, incredible story regarding my life. I kind of cringe a little bit because I don't think it's incredible, and yet.
Well, let me do the talking for you. So yes. If you guys didn't hear the last episode, we should definitely have to check out episode 39. We do talk a little bit about your start, but basically, you and I met working together at a French hotel. Mm. We're both waiters in the banquet department. And we've had some incredible chats, mostly usually in the tender moments in between service.
Moments of desperation.
Exactly. And we have gathered before. You've come over for Game of Thrones and stuff like that. But this is the first time we're really kind of doing something like this. And this is amazing. Anyway, that last episode was so good. Thank you for sharing your insight. I always value our chats and your unique lens at things. But let's frame it like this. You've been working in film festivals as of late, the last few years.
I've worked at a lot of film festivals. I mean, I consider them to be a lot. Other people are probably not, but
I do. Andres just appears sometimes like at the hotel and
a month,
and you're in Spain and you're all over the place. So you speak three languages?
Four languages. Thank you.
Wow. Plus five, the language of love.
Yeah. So always, five, really. Always. Six.
Seven.
Six or seven. I started working at film festivals as a way of keeping myself intertwined with the industry when I wasn't necessarily being in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Or on
a way
on
to
tour.
Scratch that itch, engage that.
Right.
Attitude.
Just keeping, you know, like what they say is, what's the name of it? It's proximity is power, right? And so in a way, when you are in the field, you're always, whether you're being the one that is the focused one or the one that is looking at the focused person, you still learn and you're still in that, you're still close to
you're
the
on the
fire,
front lines,
right?
Per se.
Right. Yeah. I mean, film festivals don't give you that aspect of filmmaking. Yes, there are times where exceptional times where you get to spend more time with the filmmaker or the actor that reveal or kind of lend themselves to really wonderful anecdotes and really
or like getting under the hood of the process of filmmaking.
Yeah, that organically, I like to have those organically come, especially because when you work at a film festival, you know, it's not very kosher for you to be like, oh, give me, do you mind if I just get a selfie with you? I mean, that to me is an aberration of professionalism that I tend to.
So you have to maintain that professionalism. We talked about in the last episode, the kind of getting under the hood, that people are always people, like whether or not they're like A-list actors or A-list producers or directors, or this is the hot movie right now. You know, you've worked a lot with Ana de Armas and, you know, I can name names, Javier Bardem. I know you've worked with a lot
of. Yeah, Javier Bardem. I've been with Woody Allen and.
So that's incredible. Yeah. And like you said, just to be around it, obviously you can't be like, hey, you're not interviewing.
No,
them
you, observe,
or
you observe.
You observe.
So here's the thing I will have to take away from. I think that many times in my case, I'm going to talk to my experience. The whole process of trying to achieve a goal, like acting, for example, having a career in acting, is so daunting because of what you are exposed to at times or what you see on television. I guess the universality of the struggle is real kind of thing. But when you see these people in the unobserved or in the quiet moments, if you want, you get to see that they're not much different than you. And what that does is that kind of puts
demystification.
You back into, exactly, that puts you back in the race. That puts you back in
the
discourse of like, oh, well, if that person that can't even make one fucking appointment, if that person can get a career, I certainly can do that, right?
Yeah, I'm good at making appointments.
Right, and then you also get to see, you get to hear them I guess the wonderful thing about it is that you get to sit into the different conversations that they had, whether it's with press or even behind the scenes, and you get to see that there's a lot of similarities between you and them. That, as we talked about the billionaires in the other episode, it's not, you know, we do a disservice to ourselves when we distance ourselves from that.
When we create a us and them mentality.
Because, yeah. A, there is no way, you know, Tony Robbins talks about having influence over people. This is not to manipulate them, but you need to understand what motivates someone in order to be able to influence them, right?
Right.
And so if you want to solve problems, and great problems in the world that are happening or fleshing out today have their roots exclusively in our inability to understand that that person that we hate across the table is exactly like us, but with different priorities, right? If we were to acknowledge that, then I think things would be less upheaval about the process. There would be
less divide.
We would be less mystified by it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And so
that's the Wizard of Oz of these people that are like the gatekeepers or whatever you
want.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, they're not such. I remember watching a show called Absolutely Fabulous, where, you know, it's a comedy, a British comedy, and Dwayne goes into an art gallery, and she was given the roundabout, like, oh, you're not good enough for us, and da, da, da. And she finally gets someone to take care of her, and she turns around and says, you're only working at a shop anyways, right? Mm-hmm. Like, kind of like puts, you know, like, let's just really see what we are doing.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, as far as film festivals go, you get to see that these people do have fears, and these people do stress out, and these people do have, like, they might not have like the problem of maybe having to run around, count their pennies to pay the rent, but they have equally aggravating issues that are not privy in the, you know,
that are just as real and just as,
they're very real.
Yeah, and pressing.
And they're very pressing. And I think that
there's always a fire burning somewhere.
Right? Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know what? These people, you know, whereas your fire is $100 worth, these people are dealing with like billions of dollars worth,
stakes,
or millions of dollars.
I know. Well, the more money you have, the more bills you have. You know, the more people feel like they have to keep investing.
But there's still bills.
There's still bills, and it's still a very real.
You still wipe your ass. You know,
you still
it's
wipe
like
your ass.
It might be a little whatever Cottonelle or whatever. It's still wiping your ass.
Yeah. Real quick, so walk us through like a little bit of your role in the festival, so we can kind of get. In the festivals,
okay,
and what
so
you do.
What I I'll take it step by step, and I'll go. So yeah. My department usually is public relations of the department. Now, that I find myself having to translate that here in the States, because it's not like, oh, come to our film festivals. What it means by public relations is really about public relations. I become the face and the functioning of the film festival. And what I do is my department is what I call, where we is the catalyst for everything else to happen. So you have the, you know, the guest relations department, you have the movie, the programming department, you have all these different departments that throughout the year start piecing together the film festival by selecting the movies, by inviting the crews, by selecting who's going to come and who's not going to come, what awards they're going to, all these things. And then they basically dump all that information into our department, and we are the ones to tie together and orchestrate everything. So, you know, in regards to Ana de Armas, for example, with Blonde, or with The Eyes of Tammy Faye, which I also handled in the film festival in St. Sebastian, my job was really to get all that information and get that team, especially with the large teams of, with Jessica Chastain, came with 25 people. So I had to basically orchestrate, made a mini festival of them.
Wow.
And I'm responsible in, I am
and
the
this
liaison
was in, this
between.
This was in Spain?
This was in Spain, yeah.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was the liaison between all the different activities, all the different, like, you know, the people who wanted to interview with them, the presentation of the movie, you know, all these, what they call, all these, loose strings, right?
Threads.
Yeah. All the flecos, as we call them in Spanish, uh-huh. right? I basically execute them, right? Mm-hmm. But what is most important to me is to create this environment, this safe space, where these actors, the talent, the directors, whoever is under my care, I want them to be able to enjoy the film festival. I want them to enjoy their work. I want them to feel absolutely relaxed. I want them to go on a vacation. I want them to feel so comfortable that they leave renewed from that. Because when you go promoting, I mean, you have so many demands. These people have so many demands. It's like nonstop.
Right.
Jessica Chastain, for example, when I was doing it, her, like, I would do the press conference and then bring her right back, and she would be in front of someone from, let's say, 10 o'clock in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, having people ask them. And this I hate, you know, when you don't take real pride in what you're doing and you're not putting your heart and you're just doing a job, then you do the same perfunctory questions over and over again with the same response over and over and over again without really discovering more into, you know, into the universe of the person that you are swept away by the work, right? It's almost like if you have Michelangelo over... Like, if you were to be able to sit down with Michelangelo, what questions would you ask?
So, right? You like chapels, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, get out of the way. Are you kidding me? You have this brilliant person. I want to have the insight of how they see life. How do they...
Would that be something you'd be interested in maybe pursuing? I mean,
what?
Like more of an interviewer, EPK?
That could be. I mean,
so that you could bring...
But that would be for my own... If it serves my purpose of trying to... decipher life, then yes.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is, you know, like, I want to know what it felt for you to be there. Tony, again, I use Tony Robbins because he's one of the cleanest and clearest mentors in regards to what I seek in life, right? I want a life of growth and contribution, period, right?
Yeah.
And which includes a lot of love and being, you know, living life beyond the limits, right? Yeah. And
true deep purpose.
Yeah. You know, like really, if we're here and we're having this round, I want to be able to know how to handle the VHS or the DVD player fully. I want to be able to operate it fully.
We're
in
blue right now, but...
What? Yeah, I know. Like, yeah.
4K.
Yes, exactly. So, you know what I'm talking about.
No,
like,
I love that metaphor.
We don't want the blinking light there and not being able to understand how to use the technology that we have. I want to be able to, like, get my hands and dig deep.
This is not a dress rehearsal. This is real.
Exactly. And so, and even if it's dress rehearsal, why not go full out on the dress rehearsal?
All in, yeah.
If there's a show afterwards, holy shit, it would be so much fun to do the show. Instead of being, like, stressed out, like, I'm going to forget the line. Right. So, in regards to that, would I be interested in interviews? I would love to be able to ask them meaningful questions to get meaningful answers as far as life, because they do apply everything.
Yeah.
Everything that how you do one thing is how you do everything.
I love that.
And so, if that's the case, I want to be able to understand my content. I want to be able to see the map ahead of me and know what to expect. I want to know that if it's costing me time, if it's costing me, you know, my peace of mind, that perhaps around the corner is that bag of $1 million, is that solution that I'm looking for that will make everything else sense, that will make it worth it, right? Many times we are just like a horse with the blinders on, kind of at the wrong thing.
Very myopic.
We're like, oh my God, again, I have to
pay the rent.
I have to take the donuts out. Oh my God.
Yeah,
you
know,
why the hell did you get involved with doing the donuts to begin with? Right? So I would love to do that only with the purpose of sharing insight. A very important and useful trend that has happened from before COVID, but especially COVID, it's kind of like do it yourself, kind of like find out how to do these things. That's why TED Talks came out and Tech Talks came out. And then
empower
the Masterclass come out.
Masterclass.
You know, it's like, holy shit, how can I shorten my journey? But how can I spend more time learning about the journey rather than being freaked out about the journey? Right?
Yeah.
Rather than being like, oh my God, I'm lost in the jungle.
I can't change a tire.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
it's like, so yeah. Yeah, and so to me, also going to film festivals, I get to see, especially what I love is the same thing that it touches upon, like my creation story, if you want, which is I come from a marginal community, which is Puerto Ricans here in the U.S.
You were born in Puerto Rico.
I am gay, and so therefore I see life very differently from the experiences that I've had and so forth. I speak four languages, so that opens up different worlds, the idiosyncrasies, not only of the language itself, but of the culture that speaks that language. And
right.
You know, and to me, going especially to the Spanish film festivals, I get to see movies that come from different countries. Like, you know, you have Lithuanian mm-hmm. movies. You have all these different people with different idiosyncrasies. Even though they might be similar, it's still very different.
Yeah.
And be able to understand from the differences, you get to see the pattern more clearly.
You can glean right? the similarities and the connections.
Yeah, exactly. And then you'd be able to
handle the humanity.
Get to see, by seeing it from different angles, you get to see the solutions in a much more fun, interesting, and novel way, right? And so I do love being able to get outside my humdrum of everyday life in Los Angeles and be able to be transported to a tiny city in comparison, who has disproportionate. I mean, Saint Sebastian is a small town, and to know that is like Cannes, for example, is a small town in comparison. But for it to be kind of like exercising such a huge influence in the film industry is beyond my mind. And to be able to witness all these teams that have been, you know, they're here just to promote the movie, but really understand, really be reconnected with the reactions of the people, and you know what we do in the film festival, to fall in love and to really understand how impactful their work has been, you know.
Yeah.
and be able to celebrate that, not necessarily by drinking it away, but you know, like it says a lot to be able to like suddenly, you know that you sweat it, you have these like dark nights of the soul. And then suddenly understand that very painful journey you took was worth it and was necessary for you to gain access to the next level, phase, dimension that you're experiencing right now. And to be able to witness that up close it's mind-boggling. So yes, I do love... I mean, it's a lot of work. I'm not.
Yeah.
It's a lot of stress. Like the first.
I know
few days,
you. When you every time you come back, you're like, I've slept 3 hours.
Holy
a night
shit!
For the last,
it's
like,
so off. And I love everyone's like, how was your vacation? Fuck you and your vacation.
I know. I remember even Eric Lemire, like, the GM. He was like, how was your vacation, Andres? And you were like, vacation. Wasn't a vacation. Okay, I've worked harder than you guys working all along.
Oh my
here.
God! It's like, you know, like to wake up, sleep 3 hours, and wake up in a puddle of sweat. And have to like be dealing with like, oh shit, now I have to talk to the gendarmerie in the French airport and be able to access this person. I mean, these are things that like, oh, that perhaps you might not think is important, but you know, like picking up someone and having and indicating to them that you're very much in charge and that you have everything thought out way in advance.
Right.
Is crucial, because if you don't, then you have to rebuild that trust.
Then the cracks
and that
start
is
to show
so and, much more difficult
and
than
it sense.
Is. Yeah.
Yeah, and like you said, I like you said you gain value, and it is a lot of work, but you feel like that's your contribution of making the people feel more at ease through the process so that they can access.
So they can do what they are
they can
here
do
to
their
do.
Thing.
You know, you cannot get the generosity of a Glenn Close or a Meryl Streep by harassing them before that.
Yeah.
They're not going to collaborate. Their attention is going to be focused
vibes.
On something else.
Survival.
That is not,
yeah.
Exactly. That is not supposed to, that, you know, we create art because we don't have to be fending off the saber-toothed lion. And, you know, if I hear someone else say the T-Rex, we didn't. Exist, coexist with T-Rex. So please don't say humans
I mean,
are. This
I have a Jurassic Park toy over there, but I mean,
yeah, well, that's
that.
A different story. that's another reality. But you know, like our best moments, if you look back, if you reanalyze your life, your best moments were the moments where you were able to allow your genius to flourish in the genius sector of you. And that might be whatever. I mean, in me, I think the genius sector is directing and kind of observing and editing and kind of seeing the minutiae of what an actor does, right? That's the storytelling part of it.
Yeah.
Other people might be geniuses as far as like explaining technology. But they can't explain technology, and I can't dive into a movie if all hell is breaking loose around you and you're in survival mode and can't really have the breath and space for you to have that flourish. Right.
So you definitely take a lot of value for yourself to be able to give them this.
Oh, 100%.
This bubble of 100%.
I don't sit and watch the movies, although I would love to. I don't sit and watch the movie because I know that on the balance, whether I get some positive aspect of the movie is not as important as being there
doing the job.
Which happens all the time. I was like, oh, I'm done with this. Like, they say one thing. I'm going to watch the movie. Don't worry about me whatsoever. And then you're like, okay, peace out. And then they walk out. They get lost. And then this whole fury.
Whole nightmare.
this whole nightmare unfolds because you weren't right. So I don't get to see the movie. I do get to see the person that created the movie. And in a way, you get to see a glimpse into the universe of that person, how they think, how they.
And that's huge.
That's huge. That is actually.
You can watch the movie on the plane on the way back to LA.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. So it's a way of getting closer to them and seeing them as humans, and then understanding, you know, that all excuses are valid. All excuses are valid, but all excuses are equal. And so if they are equal, then it's just like in the Incredibles when the little kid says you're special, you're just special, and he goes, yeah, everyone's special. That means that no one is special, right? And so that same thing goes with this. That, you know, if we the moment that we allow us to dive into this thinking, like success leaves clues. And the clues don't necessarily come out in the final product, the very shiny movie product, but rather the person that was there day in, day night, knowing that this film could be a flop, knowing that the funding could disappear in 1 second, knowing that, but they went and did it the same. So going back to what I was saying about the excuses, I found myself many times not wanting to go out to auditions because I already predetermined the outcome. I always said, oh, it's going to be like the last time. I'm not going to get the part. Because of
right.
When you hear these stories of struggle and see the success attached to it, then you can say, this can be very possible to me. And so therefore, knowing that everyone else is struggling, it deactivates the possibility of you hiding behind that excuse. And so, yes, all of us have reasons why we haven't done X, Y, or Z. But are they valid enough for you to sit and just determine that that's the end of that story? Or whether you choose that that's just one step along the, you know, not the way, you know, another step towards the way to Mount Doom and, you know, to lay rest of this ring no matter what happens.
Yeah.
And then reap the benefits or whatever it is that comes at the other
end. It's the journey.
Yes, it is actually the journey. I've hated it so much to hear it's the journey, not the destination. But it is, because if you look at all the stories, it is the most captivating stories. And this is going back again to
it's like Marcel versus Eve, you know?
Right. That it's not they're going. Marcel goes for the destination rather than the journey.
Than the journey.
Right?
Yeah.
They just have a collection of things, but they don't know how they got there, right? Whereas Les Roses Vernis, I think, especially the way that the character is, she knows everything. She knows what sweat, tears, and blood at times from the thorns have come out of it. And so therefore, she knows the ins and outs, and she would be much more resilient, challenged than oh my God, I forgot his name.
La Marzelle
would. So, in conclusion, of this, you know, reply. I think that we need to fall in love with the journey. We need to fall in love with really understanding how we chip away at this small self that we call ourselves, right? That we call Andres, or we call Andrew. How we will one day look back at this point in time and say, holy shit, look how far I've come.
Yeah.
And look how far I've come, not in length of journey, but rather how absolutely I have unleashed myself into who I am today, and how grateful I am for all the challenges I had. Jim Rohn, which is another mentor, not physical mentor, but I've read a lot of his books, but he says, ask not so much, just like JFK would say, but ask not for less challenges, but ask for more talent, mm-hmm. right? Ask, if you want to talk to God, ask the universe, ask whoever, ask yourself not to ask for lesser problems, but rather a greater self of yours that can handle that.
Yes.
And when we go out on a limb and we see ourselves in that lonely path, I think that what gives us oxygen is seeing other people that have gone through a journey similar to us have a resilience at the end of that journey. Because that means that when we are in the darkness, like Churchill said, if you find yourself in hell, keep going, right? In other words, that might not be the actual quote, but it's similar to this, meaning if you feel like you're like in the deep chasm of hell.
Yes, the belly of the beast.
Then you're in the right place.
Yeah,
that's all what the action is. All you need to do is keep walking, and strength. Eventually you'll leave hell and be in somewhere else. But yeah. In the journey, you'll have really strong legs. Oh, exactly. You'll need all those strength legs. It's exactly like the Karate Kid going wax on and wax off. You know, we go through the pain of the wax on, wax off. I've cleaned all these fucking cars. Where the fuck is my money? Right? You know, and then suddenly, out of the blue, Mr. Miyagi suddenly pulls this move that you suddenly discover.
That'll be our next film we talk about.
Yeah, my brother used to love that movie.
Oh, it's great.
So much. So Mr. Miyagi suddenly demonstrates to you that you shortened the trip by doing this. He showed you the shortcut. That doesn't mean, like what they say, life right. is a marathon. But marathons can be run in 2 hours. Marathons can be run in 6 hours. It doesn't mean that you have to go slow. It just means that there's a life that you need to allocate the energy, and that it is worth the while to go through the thistles, because on the other end, you get to see Sleeping Beauty, right? And then the end, if you want Sleeping Beauty. And then the other end, you might have everything that you're pursuing is on the other end of that thing that you fear. But you can't access it. And as you pointed out before, you cannot be a billionaire by staying the same. You cannot be the person that you want to be by staying the same. Einstein said,
it has to be growth. It has to be change.
It's insanity. Insanity is wanting a different result by no. Insanity right. is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. Right?
Yeah.
And what Einstein did say was the level of thinking that created the problem is not the same level of thinking that will solve it. Total paraphrase.
That's good.
It's rather you are not going to be able to solve the problems in front of you without a paradigm shift, which is growth, right?
Which is growth.
And again, that's what I do.
And that's what films are about.
Good films. Right?
Good films.
The ones that tell stories, the ones that allow you to jump in the trenches with the actors,
right?
Or the trenches with the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. So cool. Well, walk us through some of your why. We said some of this in the last episode. I want to reiterate and feel free to say anything again. But Andres, you were born in Puerto Rico. You speak fluent Spanish. Spanish was your first language.
Yes.
Your English is amazing. Your French is amazing. You're working on Italian now as well. Yeah. What do you think gave you that motor, that drive, to that hunger, to want to expand that way?
Languages?
Yeah,
I think
and the multicultural element.
I That's a good question that I am still trying to find an answer to. What I can tell you is that I found richness in sharing. I found richness in transcending limitation. What I mean by transcending, every language presents yourself with a different world, and it really is a different world. Even though you might, you know, casa, house is the same thing. It's a different universe. It's kind of like when you see the cafe in Star Wars,
all right,
where there's Tatooine. Like all these, yeah. Well, you see all these different creatures coexisting in the same plane. Well, you know, and everyone being kind of like unfazed by it, right?
Right.
I think that my fascination with I was forced in a way. I had to be able to speak both languages because I lived in a bilingual society, even though it's not as bilingual as I thought it was. And I think that my brother also had a great part with it. My brother was had handicaps, or he had different abilities. His way of looking at life was definitely shaped by his handicaps, if you want, his limitations or his different abilities. And so it always, I was very attached to him, and I'm still very attached to him. And what that meant was I wanted to jump in there with him in his world and be able to understand him in his world, not translate it in a cold way, but right. I wanted to experience and live it. And my objective always when learning a language, I wanted to be mistaken for a native. I wanted to be able to be like a spy. I wanted to be able to disappear.
The chameleon.
And be able to experience things without having the explanation of it. And so when, for example, right. in Paris, I was very keen on just kind of like acquiring some of the gestures and habits, like, you know, like kind of like the, so that I could mimic it enough so that they suddenly considered
this is
so
a native.
They could just drop those walls and I could just see behind the curtain. Right?
Right. It's like being in acting when you're
just
in
the scene. Yeah, it's just like, you know, sometimes when you speak a foreign language and you're beginning to go to that country and you're struggling to share that, everyone keeps you kind of like a basic. You know, it's like, I speak English now, so yeah, hey, guarda questo. You know, they treat you kind of like this anomaly, but you're never part of
that. You're never really immersed.
You don't get to see the secret chambers. I'm interested in the secret chambers.
You want the secret gaze. Right? Yeah.
And so that meant that from the get-go, I was paying attention to the sounds. I was paying attention to the rhythm. I was paying attention to things that when most people, when they learn languages, they just look at the surface. They just look to the quick fix of like, oh, just teach me the vocabulary and I'll be done. I wanted to get the habits, the thinking and the viewpoint that would allow me to slip into that. And in fact, when I do speak different languages, there is a shift. And when I don't make that shift, when I don't play the character, I have problems speaking that language, even in Spanish. Huh. Like I feel I'm going through therapy because I need therapy.
We all do.
We all do, right? But what I found interesting is that my therapist right now is on leave of absence for family reasons, and I got this new therapist in the meantime who is a Spanish speaker. And for the first time, I did a session in Spanish, and it was kind of clunky because I was in my head. And what they say is, when you're in your head, you're dead. Well, I needed to shift it so that I could flow in that language. And interestingly, I would flow
more. Because you feel like English
more
has been your like therapeutic
tool. Because it's
tool
exactly. I've exercised it more in English that than I had done in Spanish. And so
you can't just like, you know, change the word into Spanish. And
I can't. And I can. It's just that I find it more draining because I have to be thinking and I have to be manipulating it myself.
You're not just open.
Whereas in English, up to now, because I've had hundreds of sessions in English, I kind of just went with the flow. I can just do this, right? That I'm saying. So I think that to me it was important. I always wanted to also portray myself, be able to have the capacity of being a native, because I wanted to have the same opportunities acting-wise as Meryl Streep did. I thought Meryl Streep was a foreigner. I didn't know she was American when I was growing up, because I saw her in Sophie's Choice, Out of Africa, with all these like amazing renderings of accents that I just couldn't fathom anyone.
How could someone actually?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so to me, a language is kind of like a canvas. You can actually create this the sounding. I mean, even you know, when I was saying right now, I was like, La vie sans beauté, c'est quoi? Right? The delivery of her saying that was so beautiful. And it doesn't even, like, you can't really translate.
Yeah, the subtitle's not giving you the real.
Even if I were to translate it in English, it doesn't give you it doesn't unfold the same way. So it doesn't give you that poetic reveal that the structure in French does. Like, you know, in English would be, life without beauty, what is that? It's kind of clunky and kind of awkward. The translation would be, what is life without beauty? But then it doesn't have the reveal at the end, right? It doesn't guide you through this sentence. I'm getting a little technical about it, but
no,
you know,
I love
like,
this.
So Italian movies, for example, have a rhythm. Spanish movies from Spain have a rhythm to them that can only be given with the musicality of the rhythm, with their accent, with their situation. It's almost like the accent comes out of behaviors that are in society, and kind of taking one away gives you a whitewashed experience, a whitewashed version of what you're seeing of the story. And so,
right.
To me, yeah, story. I'm not saying that you can't watch dubbed movies, that you can't watch like subtitle movies, but I have to say that there's something to be said about a good French movie, watching it original soundtrack and everything, just the same as watching.
Yeah, I was
American
thinking that
movie.
When I was watching The Rosemaker for our episode, I thought, oh, Andres probably doesn't need the subtitles, and you know, I honestly love so much about it. And there's the visual language of film, and there's the acting of the facial work and the expressions and all that. But still, I think, like you're saying, there is that lost in translation element of you just don't get.
Again, it's not to say that you should deprive yourself from that. I'm just saying that the more you lean into it,
If anything, it's whetted my whistle to want to explore the language more.
Yeah, and then you
look
knew,
at it
for
like
example,
a door
this
opening.
Movie itself, it's French, and it's very different in character and in spirit than a lot of movies that we see here in the States. The focus of it, the actual interactions, the acting in it, it's very believable and everything. It's just richer because it's different. And you get to see when something is different, you are paying attention in a different way than when you kind of zone out because you kind of can't predict what's going to happen next.
Right.
And that's a sad moment in filmmaking when your audience already has tuned out because they already know where you're going.
Yeah.
You know?
So you've lost them.
Yeah.
That's game over.
Game over and waste of time.
And waste of time,
And resources. And I don't know. I think that, you know, like I've seen other movies where the premise, I don't care what the premise is. Just let me be in that world. Don't explain it to me. Just allow me to be in that world.
Right.
I want to be transported
again,
to
show,
that
don't tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, like this movie, I was like, oh, it's about a rose maker. I don't know anything about roses. I mean, whatever. But by like minute 30, I'm like.
You already had a rose garden planned out.
I'm like, this is awesome. I want some roses up in here. And get some roses.
Yeah.
All right, Andres. Well, thank you so much, man. Your story is so cool. Keep up the international prowess and the film festivals.
You
have, when's the next, what's next,
the next
for you?
So my next film festival will be in September.
Okay.
That's usually when I go.
That's the
big
one.
Back to the mother country, España.
España.
Yeah. I'm trying to see if I'm getting in. I used to work here at the La Leaf, which is Los Angeles Latino International Film Festival. I kind of narrowed down my scope of work. But it still fascinates me because on someone, it's always you're walking into someone else's point of view of what's interesting, what's out there. And most of these movies you wouldn't be able to have access to once they're gone from the film festival. It's really difficult to like be able to like, I was surprised we could get this one. Because
yeah, I think we got lucky that it was on
very Prime. Lucky that was on yeah. Prime. Yeah,
yeah, guys, check out Rosemaker on Prime again. Check it out.
So yes, I will say I really thank you for having this opportunity. This gives me wings, as I say, for Red Bull.
Yes, this is great.
And
to many really, more, sir.
Yeah, thank you so much. Keep it up. I am so inspired by you.
Oh,
and thank you. I know that. I know that your listeners are very grateful that you decided to take time to have these 40 different episodes to draw from.
40.
And it comes from your passion for filmmaking and storytelling. Ultimately, that's what it is. And, you know, at one point, it was more painful not to do this than it was to stay in bed. You know, metaphorically
Absolutely.
Speaking, because, you know, of course you're a hard worker and everything.
I love bed though.
And I love bed.
I love lying in bed.
I was in bed before I got here. So,
yes,
so I'm not complaining about that, but it is because of actions. When we take actions like you just did, then things that are worthwhile come up and get blossomed. And we are the ones who birthed that, and that's our responsibility, I guess, or that's our mission to life, and that's our reason to be, our quo vadis in a way.
Yeah.
And also, I guess, from someone that has been dealing with depression, the key to it is to go into action. The key
yes.
to listen to yourself and do those very things
I struggle
that might
too,
be cumbersome at one point. But that once you check off that off the list, it opens a whole panorama, a whole new field where you can play.
Yeah.
So stop denying yourself the joy and start doing it. And that's what you did. I'm inspired to do that, take action. So I thank you for that, Andrew. And I really am grateful for you having me here humbly. I'm very humbled by your invitation. And I pray that we do another collab. Or that you have me as a guest in the future.
Oh, absolutely, sir.
And if not, don't be surprised if your wheels, if your tires are slashed. I will take responsibility.
I'll know who to ask first.
Yes.
No, thanks so much, Andres. I'm inspired by you too, brother. And yeah, just keep it up. And I know as artists, sometimes we can get in our own way and get in our own heads. And I like what you said, but the pain of not doing it becomes worse
when
than the pain of...
When the pain of not doing is more than
the pain of... Of actually moving.
Of doing it. Yeah, of doing it. You have to be able to have your goals and your outcomes and your why. It's the big thing is answer the why are you doing this? Why? Get to it. Go down 7 layers.
Dig.
And once you dig and once you enter that realm, let me tell you, it might be painful because it might be scary and stretching outside your comfort zone. But comfort zones are like a noose.
Like a prison.
It's like a noose. You outgrow it, and sometimes that news that seemed very comfy and very comforting and cuddly around your neck is the
is
same thing
killing
that's
you.
Not killing you.
Yeah, so, I love that.
So step outside the comfort zone, and it's going to be worth it.
It's going to pay off.
I hope you don't throw this in my face when I'm like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to lose
I know,
weight.
Right? Yeah, so. No, I'm the same way.
Yeah,
I will not. All right, sir. Thanks again. Talk soon.
Bye-bye. Thanks.